Send us your text messages at 1-800-465-8770. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
So Horizon Air has a reputation.
Doesn't sound like a good one from the way that you're leading this off with.
Not a very good reputation, because they tend to be, how should I say this, always late. Always late.
That's your biggest peeve with them?
They're uncomfortable to ride in. They are cheap. And I suppose people can justify dealing with the very uncomfortable seats and small cramped corners and the fact that they're always late by saying, well, you know what, I'm saving $115 on my flight to Las Vegas or Portland or wherever. Fine. This story is not good looks for Horizon. Comes to us from the Associated Press. In fact, they are citing a bigger piece in the Seattle Times, and they say, Horizon Air has a dangerously lax safety culture among their airline pilots. Now, if you're wondering if it's such a big deal, let's look at who is actually making this claim. It's not just some dude who's maybe a disgruntled employee, a former pilot, right? That, I think we would all say, okay, the dude's upset that he or she got fired and blah, 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 blah. This is according to John Hornibrook. Do you know who John Hornibrook is?
I don't.
He is the president of flight operations.
Of Horizon?
Yeah. It's kind of a top guy, right?
Yeah.
He wrote an internal email to the airline managers and pilot leaders. It was an email that was sent on November 27th, so right around the holidays. And I just want to read one sentence from it.
Go for it.
Because it's a long, just one sentence. If we sit back and do nothing, we will have an accident. Nothing good can come of this trajectory we are currently on.
Oof.
Yeah. I will never, ever, 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 ever fly Horizon Air based solely on this email.
Because of this?
Yes. Well, I mean, also because I'm snooty and I would never fly Horizon Air.
See, I pictured that, but they're being proactive.
No, they're not.
They're solving the problem before something happens.
This is not being proactive. Now, to be fair to Horizon, let's give it some additional context, because they're basically saying we want to be proactive because our safety culture is getting a little bit lax. Not that they've had a whole bunch of problems that are major. In fact, when you look at their history, they've only had one serious accident that happened in 1988. There was a Q400 crash landing at SeaTac because of an engine fire. There were four passengers who suffered some pretty serious injuries, no deaths, thankfully. But that was the last time they had a major issue. Now, according to the Seattle Times, Hornibrook listed a whole bunch of different incidents. And it ranged from pilots going over airspeed limits to aircraft approaching stalls, and included weather-induced threats that perhaps could have been avoided. That doesn't sound that bad.
No.
Because to me, it's all like, y'all are late all the time, and you're piloting a little bit faster to get to the spot where you need to go so you can kick all the people off. We're all looking for a greater deal and then move more bodies onto the plane. And so if you're going a little bit fast, with all due respect, nothing's going to happen. Now, I know, because I was just on a plane in which they told us as we were taxiing back into SeaTac, keep your seatbelts on until we come to a full stop and the light goes off. Dude, we are going 5 miles per hour. There is nothing that's going to happen if I take off the seatbelt. And you know how I know nothing will happen?
Because you do it every single time.
I always take off the seatbelt. You know what else I do?
Stand
Turn
up.
On my phone before I'm not supposed. Before I'm allowed to.
I know you sit in first class, but does that still matter? Like when people stand up before the doors even open, and you're just sitting there, like staring at everybody.
Okay.
That's my biggest pet peeve on planes.
Yes.
People in the last row are like, oh, I need to stand up right now.
So I'm with you to a point. And I'll say this, because every once in a while I have to take a plane and sit with the normal people.
Ha ha.
Because I didn't buy tickets quick enough and it's sold out up front. And I did this on my last trip to Las Vegas via Alaska Airlines, which I can now confidently say I don't like them. I used to be a big supporter of Alaska because they're local. Delta's way better. So I got up, and I was all the way in the back. I got up because my legs, I just needed to stretch. And granted, you generally don't need a stretch after a 2.5 hour flight. I just felt the need to stretch, so I got up. But I'm normally with you that I don't quite understand why people are getting up just to stand in the aisle for no reason, because the door isn't even open yet.
And they do that hunched over thing where they're the seat against the window and they still want to stand up.
Yes.
And they're underneath the overhead compartment.
That's
and they're
the
just
one
like,
I don't understand. Because you're uncomfortable. It's bad posture. You're hurting your back and probably your neck.
And then you're coming over my airspace because I drew the short stick and now I'm in the middle seat.
Totally.
See, and I won't fly Horizon because, you know,
they're bad.
Because their motors are slightly bigger than a Ford F-150, and that's not the kind of plane I want to be in.
I'm just terrified of everything Horizon Air. But I wish them all the best of luck. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
Two Seattle sports stars have been named to the Forbes 2020 list of 30 under 30, and I think their only significant accomplishment is that they are under the age of 30. There are lots of sports stars under the age of 30 that are very good, correct? We can easily name, across all sports in this country, well, more than 30 people under 30, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. We can probably name, between just Seattle area teams, 30 people under the age of 30 that should get some kind of recognition.
Sure.
Right? I'm kind of confused as to why they picked these two people, who are undoubtedly, when we're talking about sports, they are very good. But I don't understand it. So first they had Breanna Stewart, who is the forward for the Seattle Storm.
Very
who's
good.
Currently injured.
Yes. Her comeback date, though, is January 27th, right around the corner.
Okay. But she's been out this entire season, correct?
I
think maybe, did she not play a game? But
I don't think that she played a game.
She didn't even play a game. So right then and there, I question as to why you would put her on. Now, then I start to think, oh, well, maybe she's done something in the community, right? Maybe she's raised a ton of money for a certain cause. Maybe she's got a foundation that hands out money. We're talking later on about Richard Sherman's Family Foundation. He gives a lot of money to schools and communities of low-income demographics. So maybe there's that. So I want to pull what they wrote on the Forbes page. It's only like two or three sentences long.
All right, let's hear it.
Tell me if at any point I say something that would warrant you to immediately put her on the list of 30 under 30. Stewart won 4 NCAA championships at Connecticut before the Seattle Storm picked her first overall in the 2016 WNBA draft. Okay, so right now that's just a little bit of her bio.
Yeah.
So she's not done anything this year in that first sentence. Okay, you know, you got to set it up. People maybe don't know who she is. Then it goes on to say, she won Rookie of the Year honors the following season. And in 2018, Stewart won a WNBA championship and was voted the league's most valuable player.
Did you say 2018?
Yeah, and that's it.
So there's not one mention about 2019 on there?
No. I mean, 2019 did show up on the website for Forbes to say that it was published in December of 2019.
Hmm. Incredible.
Why would she be on the list? Again, I've got pride in locals being on the list. Awesome. Very good. Good for her and for the Storm. But why is she on the list?
Yeah, I'm really confused.
There's
about
not
that.
A single accomplishment in that little write-up.
Is this like 30 under 30 over the entire decade or something?
It's 30 under 30 for sports. Although it says sports 2020, so it's looking ahead. But still, there's no reason other than she's coming back from her injury, so we're going to put her on the 30 under 30?
I guess.
Shouldn't it be after an injury? Let's assume she has a really good season. And say she came back from a horrible injury, much like Jordan Morris of the Sounders. The other one is Seahawks linebacker Bobby Wagner, who the only thing that's listed here that makes kind of sense, but not really, is they say Wagner began his startup blitz in 2014, plowing a mid-five-figure sum into Denal Therapeutics, which went public 3 years later. More recently, he joined stars from Diddy to Shonda Rhimes in Andreessen Horowitz's $500,000 minimum investment cultural leadership fund, whose portfolio features companies like Hip Camp and Lime Scooters. So, he's an investor, and that's why you... Because he's a sports star and investing?
Apparently, there's not many under 30-year-old athletes who are investing their assets.
Is that true?
I don't know.
Didn't Gronk just do the weed, the CBD scam?
Yeah, he's into that. I don't know if he's under 30. Gronk might be 31.
Is he? Okay. I don't even know if I would put Gronk. I'm not making the argument to put Gronk on the list. I'm just saying, so he's got an investing portfolio. So do I. Why am I not on the list?
Darn it, Jason.
Why am I not on this list?
Because you're not under 30. Let's start there.
According to my Tinder profile, I'm 28.
That's called catfishing.
Well, no, it's still my picture. I mean, it was my picture when I was 28, but that is still me.
You're lying about who you are.
Okay, it's a little bit...
Don't be a catfish, Jason.
It's fibbing... Okay, fine.
They made an MTV show about this. Just follow the guidelines.
Is that why MTV called us?
No, I wasn't supposed to tell you that.
I saw the note on your... Okay. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword podcast to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'm on a mission to get 20 podcast subscriptions today so I can hit an internal goal that may or may not land me a bonus. Please text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link so you can subscribe to the show. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
Speaker Nancy Pelosi today declared the Democrats are moving forward with articles of impeachment. We're not entirely sure yet what crime was committed, but I'm sure we'll figure it out. And then, of course, after the announcement, she threatened a reporter to not mess with her. Joining me with her reaction, Liz Harrington, GOP national spokesperson. Liz, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me.
So I know that a crime wasn't actually committed, but at what point do you think there will be some sort of at least manufactured evidence of a crime? When will that come forward?
There'll be evidence of a crime, but it'll be on the Democrat side. The only new information we could possibly even get at this point is what was Burisma actually paying Hunter Biden for? I mean, everything we know is we've known since, for what, 2 months now, when the president released the transcript of the phone call. That was the entire Democrats' case. They had nothing. They had innuendo. They had gossip. They had disgruntled bureaucrats who didn't, you know, like that they were being left out of the loop. Well, they didn't actually have firsthand knowledge of the phone call, and when President Trump released it, that destroyed their case. There is nothing new now that the Democrats could possibly find, and the only new information we can find, which we're going to get with an actual trial in the Senate, would be, well, who exactly on Adam Schiff's committee talked to the so-called whistleblower, the registered Democrat who works for the CIA, who's a glorified leaker? Who talked to him? What did Adam Schiff know? When did he know it? What about his phone records? I mean, there's lots we can learn, but only about how the Democrats manufactured this hit job, not any wrongdoing on the Republican side.
It feels at best it would be a wash in the damage that's done. House going and impeaching the president, it delivers X amount of damage. But then the Senate is in the control of the Republicans, who could level, again, at best from a Democratic perspective, the exact same amount of damage, not just against the Democratic Party, but someone like Joe Biden, who's likely to be the nominee. I don't understand why they're doing this in the House when they know it's not going to go anywhere in the Senate and it can open up some huge issues for them.
No one understands, except they're so blinded by their vendetta against this president. I mean, Nancy Pelosi, we're told, is such a savvy political operator. She knows what she's doing. Really? Because she announced impeachment by press conference before she had any of the facts. She's backed her caucus into a corner now. You have 31 Democrats sitting in Republican Trump-1 districts from 2016 who now are getting hounded by their constituents, who now have to go back and tell their voters, sorry, I ran on being a moderate. I ran on crossing the aisle. I ran on issues like health care and infrastructure and trade. I haven't done any of that. I've joined the likes of Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I mean, what is she? I mean, this is not a savvy political operation. This is a disaster. And the Democrats, that's why the impeachment was not intended for petty partisan bickering. Mm-hmm. It was intended for something that was actually serious. When you actually had a crime, when you actually had serious wrongdoing that was from a report. I mean, in all past impeachments, you've had an actual independent counsel, you've had a bipartisan investigation, and you've had some facts of wrongdoing. You have none of that here. And Nancy Pelosi, by her own standard, said it has to be overwhelming, it has to be compelling, and it has to be bipartisan. They haven't met a single one of those standards.
If you're just joining me, we're talking with Liz Harrington. She is a national spokesperson for the Republican Party. Let's talk a little bit about what happened yesterday and why we had to sit through it. I have a theory, and here's my guess. So Democrats call three experts, in air quotes, who don't actually have any information to add. They have legal opinions, right? And so did they just testify so the Democrats could just take notes and then put that in the articles of impeachment? I don't understand what yesterday was about.
A complete disaster. You know, if we wanted to sit through a bunch of angry Democrats yelling at us for supporting President Trump, I mean, I do that on a daily basis. I turn on MSNBC. I turn on CNN. What was the point of spending taxpayer dollars? You know, one of those so-called expert legal scholars minds said he had to hold therapy sessions after President Trump won. Another has to cross the other side of the street. She can't even see Trump's name on the president's hotel. These people are unhinged. These people have supported impeachment for years. I mean, this is not the way. If Democrats were serious, if they were serious about convincing the public about getting public opinion back on their side, it never was, but trying to convince the independent voter in Wisconsin, in Pennsylvania, any of these swing states, that was not to do it, to bring in an angry panel that are making cheap shots at the president's 13-year-old son. That was a disaster yesterday. And also very telling, by the way, the Democrats barely asked a single question, and their lead counsel asked exactly zero questions to Jonathan Turley, who is not a Trump supporter, is not a partisan, in fact, voted for Barack Obama. And yet, if the Democrats are claiming their case is so ironclad, it's open and shut, it's so impeachable, certainly it should be able to withstand the scrutiny of someone who didn't even support President Trump either. And yet they were too scared to ask Jonathan Turley a single question. That shows how weak their case is.
Well, and, you know, to respond to Pelosi's point today that this was not a partisan affair, this is not all political. Let's just assume that that is true for the sake of the argument. They're going to then advance this to the Senate, in which no Republican is going to join with the Democrats. So it's obviously going to be seen as political on the Democratic side. I don't understand it. She ends up yelling at James Rosen, a reporter from Sinclair, who played the audio earlier on in the show. I mean, she threatened, "Don't mess with me." What would the reaction be from Brian Stelter alone if Donald Trump said that to a reporter?
Right. That was a threat, it sounded like. I love how she said, my heart, you know, it's a heart filled with love. Don't mess with me. Very prayerful, very solemn, serious. I mean, it's like Biden freaking out at a voter just a little while ago for having the audacity to question why his son was sitting on the board of this corrupt natural gas company. I mean, these people are unhinged. They're so thin-skinned. They don't have the facts on their side, so they lash out. I mean, that was a legitimate question. She didn't let James Rosen finish his question. The question was, you know, this is what people are saying. These people just hate the president. You know, do you? And why can't she answer that? Well, I think it's obvious that plenty of people in her caucus do hate the president, and that's their only reason for going for impeachment.
We have just about 30 seconds left. Do you think, is there any fear whatsoever for you that the American people might fall for the idea that this isn't in fact political, that the Democrats are doing this in good faith?
No, the American people are smart. They see right through it. It's so partisan. It's, I mean, these are third-rate politicians who lie for a living. This is such baloney that they're praying about this. They've been, you know, praying for it. They've been chomping at the bit to impeach this president from the beginning. Nobody buys it. People are smart, and they just want Congress to get back to work and do what they were elected to do, which is work for the American people and not endless harassment of the duly elected president of the United States.
Liz Harrington, GOP national spokesperson, thank you so much for coming on, my friend. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.
Snoqualmie, Mercer Island, Des Moines.
This is The Big Local on The Jason Rand Show.
Shoreline, Woodinville, Burien.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Yo. Hey, look at that. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. Means it's time for The Big Local. It's brought to you by Dr. Sean Keller and Smiles by Design. The concept is very simple to understand. You see, the media is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle. They end up ignoring all of you guys and where you live. So we ignore Seattle and we spend our time focused on the communities you care about most. And we start in Tacoma, where students there are sending their thank yous to Richard Sherman after his foundation gave $23,000 to six schools there to pay off their student lunch debt. Carly Holak, whose children attends Tacoma Public Schools, she tells Como News she is amazed by these donations.
It's just amazing that he would do that, and just so special that it's happening to like people that we really know. It's not just like something that you hear about that's like living and breathing in our community. It's really nice.
So they wrote these thank you notes. I'm assuming it's in crayon and misspelled and like not on straight lines, kind of weirdly curved downwards.
Are you bashing the kids for their artistic abilities? They're
no,
like
I'm just
seven.
Saying, I'm just saying kids write funny. There's big, there's like huge letters. Like, let's just say the whole sentence they want to say is, thank you, Richard Sherman, for donating money, right? So the thank you is huge. And then they realize, I don't have that much space left. And then Richard gets a little bit smaller. Then Sherman gets really small. And then for donating money goes on an angle that ends up just going all the way downwards, vertical to the bottom of the page.
I'm glad you didn't go into teaching. My goodness.
It's true. That's what kids do. So let's talk about why they're actually in so much debt. Well, they're going into debt, these schools, because a ridiculous law was passed here in Washington State that says we're not supposed to shame kids who can't afford to purchase cafeteria lunches. So what it used to be was, you know, a hot lunch is obviously going to cost a little bit more than a cold lunch. And so kids would get in line, they wouldn't have the money, so instead of giving them the hot lunch, they would give them whatever the cold lunch would be.
Cheese sandwich.
A cheese sandwich and a little carton of milk. And I think it's Washington State, so it's probably organic milk, so there's probably no cost saving there. But then they were all like, okay, these kids are getting picked on, they're getting teased by their classmates, because they have these different meals, which indicates that they are low income or they didn't have the money. And they could be called, oh, look at you, poor Peyton. That was your nickname when you were younger in Auburn.
It was.
And so they didn't want that to happen anymore. So they decided to say, okay, schools, you are now forced to give these kids the same lunch as everybody else. Well, that costs money. And the schools don't have the budgets for it. And so whether it's Tacoma or some other school, Everett Public Schools, they've got $10,000 in debt. That's doubled in the past year. It's like, okay, that's maybe a little bit doable. You can raise some money. But then you go into the Bethel School District, $76,000 in debt because of all these lunches. Now, I don't know it's because there's actual kids who are poor and can't afford it, or all of a sudden they're like, okay, I'm just not going to pay it because we don't have to. Because kids are devious like that. Seven-year-olds, have you ever met a seven-year-old? They're the worst.
Oh, they love going into debt. Just,
oh, they love it. Well, especially because it's not their money. They don't care. And so we've created these situations in which now these schools are in debt. Now, Dan Volpel is a spokesperson for Tacoma Public Schools. He says, phew, this comes as a relief.
It feels fantastic. I know it's going to be a huge relief for a lot of our families. We can hopefully come up with some solutions, collaborating with other districts across Washington to come up with ways to attack this problem and keep it from growing.
I feel like I have an easy solution. Why don't you make it so that kids can purchase either the hot lunch or the cold lunch? So then everybody has a choice, which means the kid who gets the cold lunch because they can't afford it, right, they would only be able to get the cold lunches, but then they go like, no, I paid for it, this is the one I wanted. This is better than the chicken nuggets, this moldy cheese sandwich.
What 7-year-old? What 7-year-old are you going to convince to say that the cheese sandwich is better than the dino nuggets?
I'm telling you that that's what they can say to avoid being called poor Peyton like you. That's what I mean. That's all I'm saying. Like, you've given them they no longer are obviously low income and didn't have the money. They can say, no, I totally paid. It was a 75 cents. I don't know how much lunch costs at these places because I don't like or have kids. And that's their little out. That's all I'm saying.
It's like $2.25 when I was there.
Okay, there you go. But now I got something else to say.
Yeah, are you going to start... You know, these kids are going to get bullied regardless, but go ahead.
These kids are writing their goofy thank you notes, and it's adorable that that's what they're doing. It's adorable they're doing that for Richard Sherman, and I'm sure Richard Sherman will get them and put them on his massive refrigerator wall. Okay.
I can't believe you think something in this world is adorable. That's a first.
I mean, it's adorable in a, like, is there something wrong with you? Why are you writing it like that? But okay, fine. You know what else I learned in this Como story?
That you can't read?
I can. They say the Gary Milgaard Family Foundation gave $150,000 to wipe out the remaining school lunch debt accrued district-wide. So Richard Sherman gave $23,000, and he got these thank you notes. The Gary Milgaard Family Foundation gave $150,000. In this story, there was no indication that they got anything. Did they not get a thank you note? Oh, because they're not football players? They're not star athletes? They don't get a thank you? They don't get a ridiculously written thank you note that's on a weird angle?
Are you mad at the kids or are you mad at the journalism? Because what if that guy is getting thank you notes? Or are you mad at the teachers for telling the kids to only write thank you notes to Sherman?
I suspect the only ones who got the thank you notes are the members of the Richard Sherman Family Foundation. That's my guess. Because no one knows who Gary Milgaard is. Obviously, he's whoever they named this after, important person who's donating a lot of money, good for them or his family or whatever it is. Shouldn't he also get a thank you?
Yeah, very important.
Shouldn't he be the one who gets a thank you before Richard Sherman?
I want my thank you note on his fridge instead of Sherman's.
And you know what? Maybe they did write it to them, but they didn't say so in the Como story. I want it. Go find that out.
You're Detective Ranch over there.
Yeah, but I don't like to do detective work with kids because then they're all like, why are you back on the playground again? I'm like, I'm doing some serious work. And they're saying, okay, yeah, what are you looking into? And I can never come up with a story. Not because there isn't one. There is one, but
seems
I can't
tell. Seems like a personal problem. How many times has 911 been called on you in those situations?
Okay, not that many times. Like half a dozen. So the Northgate Mall in the city we don't talk about is pretty much closed down. I think there's like one open stall in that whole place. It's closed down because they are developing the NHL practice arena area there. And so now there's a report in the Herald that says Lynnwood is expecting to get an influx of shoppers hanging out at the Alderwood Mall. Which, like most malls, not very good. Except for the South Center Mall. I actually really like that mall, even though you might get stabbed there. But it's really big and I like it. Alderwood Mall, not the best mall in the world. But again, it's not their fault. Malls just are kind of an old sort of relic of how we used to shop. But according to David Kleitch, the City of Lynnwood's Economic Development Director, he said, the emptying of Northgate Mall happened really quickly. Our expectation is that economic activity will come up here. We're the last regional mall north of Seattle. Our expectation is that we will get the Seattle-North Seattle mall trade. Here's a question I have that I can't quite figure out because I've never really been a mall person. Most of my shopping as an adult was via online services, right? And that's how I currently shop. I pretty much buy everything online or have it delivered to me from like an app service or something. It is an addiction, but it's also because I feel like I'm better than everybody else. Are people realistically going to drive 10 miles to go to a Bed Bath & Beyond or an Old Navy or a Nordstrom Rack, right? Yes. I'm trying to think. Really? Yes. They'll drive 10 miles for that?
Yes. There are so many people in this world, Jason, who are still stubborn and don't trust online shopping because, A, they feel like their packages will get stolen when they get dropped off. B, they will assume that the company is going to send them the wrong item. And C, they're too impatient to wait 48 hours to get it on Amazon Prime. Therefore, they'll just go and spend the day at the mall and go do it themselves.
Okay, well then let me pose a separate question that's related. Would they go 10 miles to Lynnwood? Or would they go significantly less miles to Bellevue and Redmond? And maybe if it's about the same to Tukwila?
Probably Bellevue and Tukwila.
Right? So why would they think it's going to happen in Linwood? I would posit that you'd likely go to Tukwila or Bellevue instead.
I don't think anybody goes to the Alderwood Mall unless you're shopping at that one radio commercial that is it's a jewelry store, and you hear it every time, and it gets stuck in your head. Located on I-5 at the Alderwood Mall, open weekends until 6, Saturdays and Sundays till 9, online at whatever it is.
See, advertising on radio works.
Yeah, it does. It's embedded in me.
I just feel like, and I'm kind of curious from you guys at home, send me a text at 1-800-465-8770. What is that bar you won't go past as far as the amount of miles you're willing to go? With the except, we're not talking about you can only get this one item you want at this one specialty store in Spanaway. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if we're talking about a generic, like a Bed Bath & Beyond or, you know, an Old Navy, which are everywhere, or a Best Buy or something like that. How far are you actually willing to go? What's the cutoff? 1-800-465-8770.
And there's another group you're leaving out here, and that's the people who have no lives, which I'm not saying are our listeners, but the people who have no lives who are like, oh, I need to get out of the house today and go spend a couple of hours at the mall and get some human interaction. And those kind of people are the kind that will drive 10 miles to go to a mall.
There are also the people who go to malls for the exercise, like the walking around. And because we have so few malls now, everyone's getting fat.
I worked in a mall that was like that, and I hated it. I hated those people who would walk laps there, and the people who would bring their normal-sized dogs into the mall. Just, if it can't fit in a purse, don't bring it into a mall.
I'm with you. And I say that about everything. If it doesn't fit into a purse,
don't bring it
anywhere. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. People are saying, hey, people just want to touch and feel the product. I mean, okay, but are you going to drive 10 miles for a towel? Are you going to go to MyPillow.com and use promo code KTTAPES for their towels? Great sponsor. 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really, really do appreciate it. We actually have not done this in quite some time, and I thought, based on what it is I saw on Twitter today, it compelled me to bring back this feature.
It's time for the dumbest tweet of the day.
I have gone through many, 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 many tweets, and a lot of them are dumb, and yet the dumbest one I could find came from actor Mark Ruffalo from the Avengers films. He plays Hulk. His tweet, it's time for an economic revolution. Capitalism today is failing us, killing us, and robbing from our children's future.
And that was the dumbest tweet of the day.
So, dude, you have made millions and millions and millions of dollars with a CGI version of the Hulk, thanks to capitalism. Dude, you own millions of dollars worth of property and goods, cars, home. How about capitalism has put you in a position where you're able to have some economic future that isn't being driven by having to work every single day crazy because you put yourself to work for a dream? And there are millions and millions and millions of other people out there who have put themselves on this path towards a dream of financial freedom. You got there a little bit quicker than a lot of other people, and you got there in large part by luck, but also talent. You see, if it works for you, it can work for everybody else. Maybe not to that degree, maybe not in that field. But there are people who right now listening to me in Squim, in Bellevue, in Issaquah, on Clinton Island. Like, people are working really, really hard. They're participating in a capitalist system, some of them for working for others, some of them working for themselves. And you know what they're doing? They're accumulating wealth for their family, for their kids, for their children's future. Don't come at us all and talk about how evil the system is that puts you in a position where you can comfortably make such stupid comments. You are a beneficiary of capitalism, right? And arguably the most superficial of it all. You play a superhero. You're a dopey guy, a pudgy dopey guy, and you play a superhero. Capitalism sounds like you're doing really, really well. Now, if you think you're doing too well, right, there are other people, and ironically, there's a Dark Waters trailer on my TV right now starring Mark Ruffalo. It's his brand new movie, and it looks awful. If you think you maybe got too much wealth and it's hurting too many people. There's a really easy way to deal with that. You could give some of it away, right?
Sign me up.
I'm just saying you can donate to charity. You can donate to the producer Peyton, poor Peyton from Auburn, and his foundation. You can give it to him. There are many ways you can unburden yourself with all that capitalism has brought upon you. It is funny that all of these Hollywood actors who like to talk about how evil capitalism is and how corrupting money is, you seem to have a lot of it. Are you self-loathing? Why do you have so much of this money? Did you earn it? The answer is either yes or no. If the answer is yes, it means you get to do whatever it is you want. If you want to give it back to the government, you can give it back to the federal government. If you'd like to give it to charity, you can do that. If you'd like to hang on to it and do absolutely nothing, you can do that as well. Stop telling everybody else how we're supposed to earn money and spend money. It's a uniquely arrogant position, and dare I say, a privileged position, to talk about how other people should be spending money. You're okay doing that because you got a lot of it. You got a lot of money to spare. There are lots of other people who don't have your kind of money. Most of us don't. We're perfectly happy in the system because we know that we can reach a future of financial freedom. Okay, Mark Ruffalo, who turns out is a Bernie bro.
And I know that he has a grit, and I know he's building. He has this huge infrastructure, and the young people dig him. And
when the young people, they dig him.
Of course, a good part of the squad signed off on him. So I'm very excited about what he's doing. He's already pushed the Democrats to the progressive values that he already has, and he keeps leading in the field even today.
Yeah,
and he'll beat Trump's ass.
He's saying he's not winning in the polls. He's actually been dropping in the polls. It's right now between Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren. I don't want to pretend that he's still not doing strongly. He is. He's got a strong level of support. But let's not pretend he's in the lead. And let's not pretend that Bernie Sanders doesn't like villainizing you. Now, you get to be on his side because he wants your money and he wants your influence as much or as little as you have. I don't know how many of the kids are following Mark Ruffalo or even know who you are outside of Hulk. But he demonizes you on a regular basis, as does Elizabeth Warren. As do it sounds like yourself. Maybe he really is self-loathing. As a self-loathing talk show host, I can identify with
you. You know about that.
I know 100% about that.
Wait, so what I'm confused by is, are you not making Hulk money here?
I'm making Iron Man money.
Wow.
I'm making Thor money. I'm not Hulk. I'm not some, like, half a character. He's not even had his own solo film.
Do you really want that? Because I don't think anyone is asking for that.
I think everyone would watch a talk show-themed movie of me.
I don't.
They watch all my stuff on Tucker Carlson. I've been on, like, 32 times. It's a Jason Ranch show.